This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. For the third time in a week, a U.S. warship has been targeted in a missile attack off the coast of Yemen. Here to discuss the ramification of those attacks is Representative Brian Babin from Texas.
Brian, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thank you. Great to be with you, Tony.
Well, thank you, Brian. I appreciate you taking time to join us this afternoon. I know as a military veteran, you're concerned about these issues. I know you're also a doctor and you focus a lot on the healthcare issues, but this we're continually seeing this provocation of the United States as if America is no longer feared by our enemies. Tell us more about what's been happening there with the Navy coming under attack by these rebel forces in Yemen.
Well, you know, now that we are now shooting back, I guess my only reaction is that it's about time, because as you said, Tony, we're being provoked repeatedly by a number of powers in the world today, including the Russians, the North Koreans, the Iranians, the Houthis, and on and on, and we seem to just be asleep at the wheel. That is, not our military, but our administration. And it's about time that we respond with something, a force in kind. And we have had a series of incidents over, in fact, the very last State of the Union address that we had on this past January, and I'm sitting there listening to the president speak, knowing that just earlier that day, the Iranians had apprehended a number of our U.S. Navy sailors, captured two small boats, and had them in captivity, and the president never even mentioned it in his State of the Union address that night, which was, I thought, totally inexcusable. And so finally we had to learn the hard way through the media exactly what had happened. And then, incredibly, our own Secretary of State apologized and thanked the Iranians for capturing our own sailors, raiding them around, tying them up, having them at gunpoint, and treating them in a disgraceful manner, which was against all international agreements, military-wise. And so our president should never hesitate to stand up to such belligerent actions like this that put the safety of our troops at risk. Because the less he does that, when he draws red lines in the sand, like he did in the Syrian conflict, and does nothing, it simply puts our men and women at risk. So I say, about time, Mr. President, that we start firing back.
Yeah, I think when you mentioned North Korea, Russia, and what's been happening in Syria there, the conflicts we've been having, confrontations with the Russian military. I mean, I would have to say, Congressman, that increasingly America is slipping in terms of the respect that it has in the international community. And that is seen as weakness and allows people, these other countries, rogue actors in this case, but if Iran is working behind these rebels in Yemen, the Houthis, to do this, it just speaks to the weakness of our foreign policy and of America in its international standing. And I have to say, that's got to be a factor in the minds of many members of Congress coming into this election.
It is indeed. It certainly is, Tony. You know, I think this was a quote by Alexander the Great. He said, an army of lions led by a lamb will suffer defeat, but an army of lambs led by a lion will win victory. And the Greeks, on another occasion, said, if you want peace, you prepare for war. And quite frankly, our military is at a very low ebb, prepared-wise. We're the lowest army troop number since pre-World War II, the lowest ship number since pre-World War I. So we've got to prepare and ready our military for a conflict. And as we have retrenched under the foreign policy of Barack Obama, and also I might add Secretary of State Clinton and John Kerry, the bad belligerent folks have stepped into those footprints. And what really disturbs me is that the terrible relationship that we have now between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and Vladimir Putin.
As a member of Congress, who obviously very concerned about national security, if this was what happened when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, is there any reason to think that it would be different if she were president of the United States?
Tony, I shudder to think what it would be like. It was one disaster after the other in her tenure as Secretary of State. I mean, we had four brave Americans left hanging out to dry, hundreds of requests to enhance and beef up security over there in Benghazi went unanswered. And the red line in Syria, just over and over and over again. We've got the debacle in Libya, on and on. And if she had her hands on the keys to our nuclear weapons, the way things have been going under her and Barack Obama's administration, I fear for the future of our nation's defense. And I don't think that we have seen, and I'm not a real young guy, let's just put it that way. I remember the Cold War very well. I served in the military back in the late 60s and all the way up until 79. And quite frankly, I don't think we've had this bad of relations with Russia since the Cold War. And this incredibly comes after just a year or so ago, they were bragging about the Russian reset. That Mrs. Clinton and Obama were talking about, and quite frankly, I think it was a joke. And we're to the point now, Tony, where, quite frankly, our enemies do not fear or respect us any longer, and our friends simply do not trust us. And that is a very bad situation when we have a military that's unprepared and a lot of adversaries that are willing to push the envelope, if you would, with the United States, because they simply don't think this president's capable of it having any kind of a tough response. And so that's why I say about time we start firing back at the Houthis, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I find it interesting that Hillary Clinton wanting to say that the Russians are behind these hacked emails trying to help Donald Trump. You know, and I don't know, maybe they are, who knows? Yeah, but maybe Putin is using reverse psychology, because I have to think that the best case scenario for him with his sinister objectives is to have Hillary Clinton in the White House.
I mentioned that today on another program, Tony. I could not agree more. Putin's worst nightmare, if he has plans for expansion and imperialism and taking over his neighbors and the worst thing that could happen to him would be for Donald Trump, a strong leader, to be in charge of U.S. foreign policy and military policy. And Hillary Clinton is more of the same as that we've seen for the last 8 years of Barack Obama. I mean, even on domestic fronts, bringing in refugees from terrorist hotspots, Muslim fundamentalist terrorists, infiltrating our refugee program, immigration, open borders. This administration, which Mrs. Clinton is part of, has absolutely been an unmitigated disaster. And Mr. Trump, this is the centerpiece of his platform running for president, and that is to secure this border, rebuild our military, and have the United States be a lot more secure. As I said a while ago, like the Greeks said, if you want peace, you must prepare for war.
Absolutely. Congressman, we've got to leave it there. We're out of time. Thank you so much, Brian, for joining us. As always, great to talk with you.
Hey, same here, Tony. Always great to talk to you. God bless here.
You can find out more about Representative Babin when you visit tonyperkins.com. When we return, Tony will share his thoughts on the third and final presidential debate, Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Some say the government should provide health care and college tuition to citizens at no cost. The idea of offering such services for free is understandably attractive to many, and that is why it is vital that we understand socialism's foundational philosophies so we can combat this fatally flawed government solution to a human problem. Watch former Congressman Bob McEwen lead an informative discussion about socialism and its true consequences at frc.org/McEwen. That's frc.org/MCEWEN.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. Wednesday was the third and final presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, and FRC President Tony Perkins was there in Las Vegas for all the political action. Here now is Tony with some of his thoughts.
If you're on Twitter, you may have been watching or tweeting, following me as I was tweeting last night from inside the debate hall here in Las Vegas. We were... It was interesting, and I'm going to talk about it because I thought it was a, from the start, there was good contrast between the two candidates. You know, there's some things are similar, not much, but there's some similarities. But the areas of policy provide the greatest contrast, and Chris Wallace, at the very start, began with a discussion of the Supreme Court. Now, I think it's... helpful that he started there because, quite frankly, I think that is the most critical issue in this election. We have one vacancy already on the Supreme Court, and just looking at the ages, and by the way, Kathy Roos on our team has published a new piece, and if you're getting my, if you get my daily update, you'll see it tonight. Looking back over the court decisions in the last couple of decades, the 5-4 decisions on critical issues and how close those decisions and freedoms have been either upheld or overturned. And so that's quite instructive, but she also talks about the age of the justices and quite frankly, just because of the age of some of the justices, it's quite likely that the next president is going to have a few vacancies to fill. So when Chris Wallace of Fox News started last night talking about the Supreme Court, he started with former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton asking her about the Supreme Court. And here I've got some clips I want to play for you today, and then we're going to talk about them. But this was right out of the chute last night. Chris Wallace asked Hillary Clinton. She got the first question about the Supreme Court. Here's what she had to say.
You know, I think when we talk about the Supreme Court, it really raises the central issue in this election. Namely, what kind of country are we going to be? What kind of opportunities will we provide for our citizens? What kind of rights will Americans have? And I feel strongly that the Supreme Court needs to stand on the side of the American people, not on the side of the powerful corporations and the wealthy. For me, that means that we need a Supreme Court that will stand up on behalf of women's rights, on behalf of the rights of the LGBT community, that will stand up and say no to Citizens United, a decision that has undermined the election system in our country because of the way it permits dark, unaccountable money to come into our electoral system.
Now, she goes on to say that I have major disagreements with my opponent about these issues and others that will be before the Supreme Court. But I feel that at this point in our country's history, it's important that we not reverse marriage equality, that we not reverse Roe v. Wade, that we stand up against Citizens United. We stand for the rights of people in the workplace, and we stand up and basically say the Supreme Court should represent all of us. Well, you know what the Supreme Court does is the Supreme Court actually interprets the Constitution as it was written. That's why this is such a big issue, because you have two very different viewpoints of the Supreme Court. As was mentioned last night, there is this view from the progressive side that the Constitution is a living, breathing document and that it changes with each generation. There is the counter view, which it is a static document. It is to be interpreted as it was written. And that is the side from which Donald Trump comes. And now you can hear what he had to say. This is what he had to say to that same question last night.
I feel that the justices that I am going to appoint, and I've named 20 of them, the justices that I'm going to appoint will be pro-life. They will have a conservative bent. They will be protecting the Second Amendment. They are great scholars in all cases, and they are people of tremendous respect. They will interpret the Constitution the way the founders wanted it interpreted, and I believe that's very, very important. I don't think we should have justices appointed that decide what they want to hear. It's all about the Constitution and so important, the Constitution the way it was meant to be, and those are the people that I will appoint.
I want to draw attention to something he said, and he said it multiple times. We're going to talk about this a little bit later with Susan B. Anthony's Marjorie Dannenfelser. But he repeatedly said last night, and it's not the first time he said it, he has said it before, that he's going to appoint pro-life justices. And you say, well, okay, so he's a Republican. Isn't that what Republicans do? No, actually it's not. He is the first one that has actually said that he will appoint justices that are pro-life, meaning that they are, and he goes on to unpack that they will interpret the Constitution the way the founders wanted it to be interpreted, you know, as it was written, not to find somewhere in the shadows of the Constitution some rights that the left wants to create, like abortion, like the redefinition of marriage, and so on and so forth. But I want you to see the significance of these two views of the Constitution, and this is on full display in this election cycle like never before. You have Hillary Clinton with the progressive view that the Constitution is a living, breathing document, and the Supreme Court is somehow supposed to be the body that, like a regular court that you would go to, you have a judge that is advocating for the people. That's not what the Supreme Court does. The Supreme Court literally calls balls and strikes when it comes to the law. Either something that a state legislature or the Congress does is in keeping with the Constitution, or it's not. Now, of course, again, that goes back to those two different views. One view is the Constitution is not a moving target. It is what it says it is. And either something is in line with it or it's not. But with the left, the progressives, the Constitution is ever-changing. And so they want to find new ways to create new rights through the Constitution. And the way they do that is through liberal justices. So this is extremely important when we look at the future, because these justices will be influencing policy for a generation or more.
To find out more about the party platforms, go to TonyPerkins.com. Coming up next, you've probably seen too many articles about who Christians should vote for in November, and our next guest likely wrote one of those. We'll be back with more Washington Watch Weekly right after this. Every day, Christian values are being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy at an alarming rate. What can ordinary Christian citizens do to make their voices heard in an arena that is set on silencing them? Send us a question you may have about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church. Go to frc.org/contact and enter Question of the Week in the subject line for the chance to be published on our blog. Thank you for standing with us. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. Many evangelical Christians have struggled with this election, probably like no other. Wayne Grudem, professor of theology and biblical studies at Phoenix Seminary, has articulated this struggle as well as anyone I know. He joined Tony on Thursday to talk about a series of articles he's written about it.
Dr. Grudem, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Good to talk with you.
Well, I know that, like many Christians, this has been a tough election cycle. And as followers of Jesus Christ, we seek to integrate our faith in everything that we do, and that includes our politics. Sometimes those choices are clear, sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're easy, sometimes they're difficult. Usually they're difficult. But share, if you would, our listeners, kind of how you've wrestled with this election and this general election.
Well, Tony, I'll be very specific. Early on in the election, in the primaries, I supported Marco Rubio, and when he dropped out, I supported Ted Cruz. My wife and I gave money to both of them, and we were hoping that one of them would win, but it didn't happen. And so Donald Trump won. Now what do we do? And so I put an editorial out on townhall.com at the end of July saying that even though I didn't say that Trump was a morally good person, that we should approve his conduct, I said that voting for him could be a morally good choice. But then the story came out of the awful video from 2005 and is describing his attacks against women, and I thought, I can't just leave it at that. So I had another editorial called Trump's Moral Character in the Election, in which I said, I just have to say right now I don't know how I'm going to vote, and I called on him to withdraw, which I thought would give us a better candidate, but he didn't, and now here we are coming up on the election, and we're back to the choice of Clinton or Trump. And then my reasoning is I really have two choices. I can't vote for Clinton. I think her policies are strongly anti-Christian and hostile to Christian values, and I'm worried that she'll use the power of government to gain more and more control over our freedoms. So I'm very concerned about that. So then I only have two choices, Trump or a third-party candidate or a write-in candidate or not vote at all. And when I look at it that way, then taking away a vote from Trump and putting a third-party candidate is helping to elect Hillary. It means that Trump gets fewer votes and Hillary needs fewer to win. So my choice is either do I vote for Trump or help Hillary Clinton win. When I put it that way, I have no question at all, because on multiple issues, I agree with Trump in his policies as opposed to Clinton's policies. And so I put a third article on townhall.com that was called, If You Don't Like Either Candidate, Then Vote for Trump's Policies. And on the Supreme Court, on abortion, on religious liberty, on sexual orientation regulations, taxes, economic growth, minimum wage, school choice, Obamacare, protection from terrorists, immigration, the military, energy, safety in our cities, on all those things, I certainly agree with Trump's policies as opposed to Clinton's. And so my argument is, sadly, reluctantly, it isn't the candidate we wanted, but I think we have no choice as Christians but to vote for Trump.
You know, there are those that are saying if you vote for Trump, you'll never have credibility in the future when you say that character matters. I mean, I've heard that. I mean, that's been said about me in my personal capacity. Of course, my point has been I was never drawn to Donald Trump because we have shared values. It's over shared concerns with the country. How do you address that?
A couple of things. First, if you don't vote for Trump, how can you ever say that issues matter? The protection of the unborn matters, and that biblical standards on sexuality matter. How can you ever say that any of those issues matter in the future if you don't vote for Trump and try to stop Hillary? So the argument goes that way. The second thing is, it's preposterous that you can never say in the future that character matters, because the whole last several weeks has been entirely about character, both Clinton's character and Trump's character, and that's why everybody's so fed up. I think you and I, Tony, and many other evangelicals have made it abundantly clear that we deplore the immoral conduct of Donald Trump with women, at least in the past. He says he's a changed person and he's apologized, and I hope he is a changed person. But we deplore that, but we also are very concerned about horrible examples of character deficiency with Hillary Clinton. She abandoned our diplomats to be killed in Benghazi, Libya. She vilified the victims of Bill Clinton's sexual misconduct. She illegally handled classified emails on her private server and put national security at risk. She left much of the world in chaos after 4 years as Secretary of State. And she continually acts as though she's above the law. And the frightening thing is the Internal Revenue Service and the FBI look like they are compromised and corrupted now, which is terrifying because of the power they have over our lives. But that's what's happened under this current administration, and Hillary Clinton would continue that. So what do? We say that character matters. It does matter, and we deplore the immoral conduct by both candidates, but we should vote based on the issues.
One final question for you, Dr. Grudem. It's another issue that's been brought up. You address it in your piece, and that is, well, you know what? We need to send the Republican Party a message that Trump is an unacceptable candidate to us, and we're not going to support the party as long as they put forward candidates like that.
Yeah, well, I'd say to people like that, you're also sending the whole country a message that Clinton is acceptable. And do you really want to say that to the whole nation? The Republican Party already got the message in the leadership that Trump was unacceptable because the leaders opposed him tooth and nail in the primaries. But he won anyway, amazingly. So why send a message that people already know and perhaps lose the future of the nation as a price for it? That's a pretty expensive message to send. I would rather say, why not send the message that a candidate like Clinton is totally unacceptable to run the country? And Trump, he will do largely what he says. He may not do everything because nobody does, but when candidates get elected, they have to stick with most of what they say or they'll lose their own party's support and they'll be totally ineffective and paralyzed. So, and his appointments to the Supreme Court that he's promised are very conservative. They're excellent. And his vice presidential choice of Mike Pence is outstanding.
It is.
And he has a number of very reliable, solid veteran conservatives in his high levels of advisory and transition team. So he's already moving in a very conservative direction, and that's mostly how he will govern, and that's what we should determine our vote by.
All right. I'm going to have to leave it there. Dr. Wayne Grudem, thanks so much for joining us. As always, great to talk with you.
Thank you, Tony. Good to talk with you.
To find out more about anything you've heard on today's program, go to TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.